I'm Corey Thomas.
And I'm Tim Lawton.
And this is the new Vintage Maneuver Podcast.
No, but I'm sorry, that's the wrong new thing. Oh, my bad.
Okay. Having nothing to do with the old Vintage Maneuver Podcast, in this iteration or this new spin on our show as we go, we're going to instead start discussing wrestlers currently in WWE, some currently in Ring of Honor, some in AEW.
Let's not get too excited before they even have a show. Let's just call them AEW.
Okay. Oh, okay.
But until Double or Nothing, they are a t-shirt company.
We will probably look back on maybe more obscure wrestlers. We might try like some New Japan Pro Wrestling matches. I don't know. But this is how we're going to roll. We're going to look at wrestlers and we're going to like pinpoint some of their best matches, some matches that we enjoyed, some matches we think you should enjoy, you should watch if you want to get to know more of them. Just a sampler, if you will. You know?
It's kind of like a then and now. And for a lot of people who don't, because, you know, we're wrestling dorks. Because that's the life we live. It's what we chose to do. And we have watched a lot of these wrestlers from significantly before the time they came to their most popular version, which is either sometimes in WWE or even New Japan in some cases. We've seen these wrestlers back when, you know, they weren't as popular. And there's nothing wrong with not doing that because, again, most people don't spend the unhealthy amount of time that we do watching professional wrestling, and that's perfectly normal. But a wrestler, we probably have some information about their past that might be interesting and relevant to understanding them in their WWE form, and feel like it just could be interesting to go back and rethink about that, or even for us to like, even if we followed a wrestler from early on in their career to now, like sometimes stopping to reflect, we went from here to here, is just a crazy thing to do. It like even, you know, hits us kind of nuts. So we're gonna take, so we're gonna like go through and sometimes the matches, most of them will be good, probably. There are gonna be exceptions, but that's gonna be for things that like are important developmentally to the wrestler. Like this match might, like, there's one match in particular that is going to be significantly worse than all the others. Well, maybe not significantly, but it's probably going to be the worst of the one that we're talking about today. But it's extremely important in watching the totality of this person's development. Mm-hmm. And that's probably going to happen more with each wrestler, because sometimes the most important matches aren't necessarily the best matches. So, but the idea is to just kind of look at this wrestler's career and take a step back to we went from point A to point B to point C, and like where the threads are and how they intertwine to make, I don't know. I was gonna go with rope, but that just seems like a lame metaphor. So I'm just gonna drop that.
I guess it's just
the rope of a wrestler's career just seems like a dumb metaphor. So I just feel like I'm gonna abandon that and then put that back on the cutting room floor, so to speak. And never look at it again. So
I'm gonna pick it up right now. I'm gonna put it on the shelf. Just dust it off. It's okay, little buddy. I'm gonna put you where no one can hurt you ever again. Here you go. There you go.
Shh. Anyway, okay. So pro wrestling.
So pro wrestling. And our first episode is the man.
Seth Rollins, and no, I'm just kidding, Becky Lynch. Seth did not manage to hold on to that at all.
The man has lost.
He dropped that.
Seth Rollins is no longer the Kingslayer. He's no longer the man.
Yep. All these women wrestlers just keep taking things from him. He just can't hold on to them. Dakota Kai embarrasses him on up, up, down, down. No longer the Kingslayer. God. Becky Lynch just comes and takes his nickname and just runs far and away with it. What does Seth Rollins even have anymore? He doesn't have the Shield. He doesn't have the Kingslayer.
Jesus Christ,
man. He doesn't have the man. He's a hollow, empty shell.
Well, now we know how Jimmy Jacobs feels.
And we'll get to that in a different episode. But today... today we're talking about Becky Lynch.
Yes.
The great usurper of the women's division of WWE. Because she was not the plan, but did not matter.
So, she refused.
Yeah, she gives zero fucks about your plan. And she inserts her own reality instead.
So. Which she will tell you. Oh, she will tell you. So the first match you recommended was Allison Danger versus Rebecca Knox, Shimmer Volume 3.
Yep. Baby days of Shimmer, back when Beth Phoenix and Natalya were still in Shimmer.
Right?
Whew. I feel old now. Hall of Famer Beth Phoenix was in Shimmer. Shimmer 3, that's how far back this goes. But yes, Rebecca Knox, baby Becky Lynch, was 19 years old, I believe. Fresh off the boat. And they were giving her a big spotlight because Allison Danger basically ran Shimmer with Dave Prezak at this point, I believe. They were co-owners or something like that. And she decided to like put her over in this big feud, and it was it was a pretty big vote of confidence to give a teenager. That said, matches, I mean, as far as independent wrestling goes, featuring 19-year-olds is pretty good. But obviously, compare that to like the polish of her now, and it is night and day. It's a good match, but there is significant sloppiness, especially in the tie-ups. You can also get a sense of like try hardness out of. I know it sounds weird now, but like now she just feels like she embodies the character, whatever she's doing. Like she's always been very good at that, but like it definitely feels like she's really trying real hard to like first be the underdog babyface. Cause like the whole point of this match, cause I should explain since no, very few people are gonna even know what this is. She came in, they had a good match, and then it seemed like she was hurt towards the end of the match, so you know they did the whole shebang with the refs freaking out, everyone thinking it was legitimate, and then all of a sudden she rolls up Allison Danger, gets the 3 count, and then acts like a total shit after. So like it was just an immediate heel turn from the rookie baby face, and that's where they went with from there. That was the whole point of the story. But even in the parts where she turns heel at the end, you can see like it's kind of an overacting. Like you get the sense of like. It's like what you do when you want to like pretend to be a wrestler, like almost like an imitation of like of what you think like a bad wrestler would be. And I mean, it makes sense because she's basically a kid at this point. And again, I might be overstating it because it isn't bad. Like she's not like, oh my God, like unwatchable. Like it's she does fine. It's just comparatively speaking, it's like, wow. Like when I went back and watched this, having watched Becky for years now, it was like. It was like, oh man, like she would never miss that or make that mistake or do that here. Like it the mistakes stand out more.
I feel like I would have to argue that I don't feel like she was as bad as all that. Yeah, like I get she's a teenager still, but I think I see the points where you could point out sloppiness and a little bit of mistiming. But I still think there's like sparks of very talented mat skills. I mean, you can make the argument that like, yeah, this is Allison Danger also. And
yeah,
it's Allison Danger, by the way. So
yeah. She was Steve Corino's sister for those who don't know who she is. She's also been a wrestler for a very long time. She was an independent wrestler exclusively, but she was already a veteran by that point. And she's very good. I wouldn't call her elite, but I would definitely put her in the quality women's wrestler category, and definitely a good like character women's wrestler, if that makes sense. Like she's very good at like elevating other talent. So, which is you know part of what she does is part of Shimmer back then was the idea was to bring in you know new wrestlers and help elevate them, and that was like her whole passion. So it makes sense. So you definitely get the sense that that's the goal of this is that Allison Ainge is trying to like help over this very young new talent and get them in to a feud and help Becky step up her game. But like, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that she's bad. I'm saying that I guess it's just a matter of it's like when you have a hamburger every day for a long time. And like hamburgers are fine. Like they taste good. But like you don't really ever have like a grade A steak like that's seasoned properly and cooked exactly right to your taste. And like that steak is like where Becky has been for like the last couple of years. Like she you know what you're getting with her matches. She's crisp, she's got strong, she knows how to cover when there is a problem to make it look right. She's got tons of personality, everything. She doesn't feel like it, like, you know, she's trying too hard. Just even when she's completely ridiculous, it comes off natural somehow. Like it just all clicks and makes sense. And she's very smooth in the ring. The transitions are all there. And it's because she's an elite level performer at this point in her career. And most people never get to that point. But back then, obviously she had potential and she's very good, and under normal circumstances, that'd be fine. But like when the comparison is, I mean, it kind of just speaks to how much she's improved and to the level that she's at now. That a match that I thought was a pretty good match when I watched it, you know, I probably watched this match for the first time 9 years ago. Right. I wasn't watching Shimmer. Well, that's not true. I watched a little bit of Shimmer when I was in high school via my Ring of Honor obsession at the time. My how things have changed. And then I went full bore and watched every single Shimmer thing and became kind of obsessed with it around 2010, 2011. Mm-hmm. So I watched it several years after it happened originally, which was still a long time ago. But at the time, you know, this was a very good match. And compared to what WWE was putting out women's division wise at the time, it was still a very good match because we're talking AJ Lee versus Brie Bella at that point.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, AJ Lee is excellent on the mic. I have no problem with her, but comparatively speaking to the current women's roster, AJ Lee was not a strong in-ring competitor, and she was the top person in the women's division for a few years there. And so
for See, people I,
who like women's sorry,
so go ahead. I have to stop you there because I feel like if AJ was given the chance to let more loose than she was, I feel like you would actually make the argument that she was a strong competitor. I would say that for like a lot of the women because there's no way to like watch, say, Naomi and Nikki Bella. I have to give her credit. Like, there's no way to watch, quote unquote, who was around during the Diva era and see that AJ was making waves, but not like basically what NXT and the Four Horsewomen like finished the job and Paige and Tennille Dashwood, aka Emma, like what they finished, AJ started, so to speak. And I feel like if she had had the reins that they did, then I feel like we could make an argument of actually she could go.
At the risk of going off the rails in the first match, I don't think that's a fair description of AJ Lee because I think AJ Lee was actually not a positive force for women's wrestling in WWE because she mostly spent her time trying to tell the Bellas and all the other women that they were the problem and not the WWE was the problem. And she cut a bunch of semi-misogynistic promos about the quote AJ Lee pipe bomb was actually, in my opinion, really not good. And the idea was she elevated herself at the expense of everyone else instead of lifting the whole division.
I don't know if that was
her intention, but
I mean, I'm like, talking about in ring work.
Yeah, that's fair. But like, she's never had a match. I can't even remember a single AJ Lee match that I was like, yeah, that was pretty good. Except maybe against Caitlyn, but even then, like, comparatively speaking. I mean, and it's not like, and it's not like none of the women from that era have had good matches. Nikki Bella has had way more excellent matches than AJ Lee has, ironically. And I mean, I guess Naomi came in during that era, though she wasn't really a wrestler until a few years later. She was more of a valet. But Naomi's probably surpassed AJ Lee at this point as well. But like, also from that era was like Michelle McCool, who was a better wrestler than AJ Lee. It was only a few years before her. Natalya was around during that era, significantly better wrestler than AJ Lee. Beth Phoenix, significantly better wrestler than AJ Lee. Also only had 5-minute matches, but she still was a better wrestler. Gail Kim, I mean, obviously. I mean, she was in and out. She didn't do a lot in WWE at the time, but I mean, even when she was there as a jobber, she would put on better 6-minute matches than AJ Lee did as champion. So, like, I don't want this to turn into a bash in AJ Lee fest, because I don't think that just being an amazing in-ring competitor is not everything it takes to be a wrestler. And AJ Lee had the it quality. She had excellent promos, and I'm not saying she didn't deserve to be highlighted. She clearly did. She did do a lot for wrestling. I don't know how much she did to elevate women's wrestling on the whole, but it's a whole other conversation that to redirect back to what we're talking about.
I was gonna like segue back into Becky.
Okay.
This is why.
All right.
I cut you off or interrupted you for AJ to swing back into Becky, as in when Becky's first fighting Allison, like you saying that she is obviously like weak in some areas and you can see the mistakes and stuff. I also see the flashes of what we're going to get in the present time. Like, for example, when she pretends to be hurt and then she kicks Allison off the apron, then she does like this fucking hilariously evil healed out Irish jig because some of the crowd has actually been like a little effed up. Basically, at one point somebody said, "Where's your pot of gold?"
Yeah, well, like, 2000s wrestling fans, motherfucker.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, wrestling fans from any era, but I mean, that was the particular, that was more, even more normal, unfortunately, yes, at the time.
And so for her to do that, and then for her to like talk trash, like at one point she's like, "Time to finish her off," I think. Like, I feel like maybe that's a little try hard, but that's also a little bit, once smoothed out, that will be the Becky that we get. Also, as note, she's been doing the fucking T-bone suplex for like years now.
Yeah.
Like, goddamn. Yeah. Also, I find it hilarious that early Becky Lynch / Rebecca Knox used Jeff Hardy's double leg drop as part of her early repertoire.
Yeah, I mean, she still uses a double leg drop now, just not as often.
Yeah,
but like, no, totally. And I'm not disagreeing with you. You definitely see like the seeds of what we're gonna get, ironically, in a heel persona.
I mean,
which also is something that if this episode had been made like 2 years ago, or even a year ago, realistically, I would be making comments about, oh, isn't it so weird how she spent so much of her time independent, like, polishing these heel characters, but now she's like the biggest baby face, just underdog, happy baby face, and she does that so well, and it's so crazy how she does the opposite so well. So it's a little bit different now. Now you can clearly see the, oh, I see. Oh, okay. That's, you know, that's why she's shifted so comfortably into the man character, because she's had this has been something that she's had inside of her for most of her career, like at least flashes of this. So like, it wasn't like she had to relearn how to heal it up or how to play, you know, or smug or all the other things. She didn't have to relearn that like some people who do turns might have to if they've been one thing for a lot of their career. She just slept. It's like an old friend that she just, you know, brought back out. Not unlike another top tier elite wrestler at the time who also, I mean, he's actually legitimately a heel at this point, but like Daniel Bryan. Like Daniel Bryan and Becky were both comparable, and they were like the babyface trinity of WWE in 2016. It was Becky Lynch, Daniel Bryan, and Sami Zayn. They were the evergreen babyfaces that, you know, underdog babyfaces that no one could ever boo, would never happen, and then WWE went and turned every single one of them heel.
Yes. I would state that Bayley I would say that, like, Bayley used to be that. And then Alexa Bliss happened. Yes, yeah. I'm blaming every one of you fans who are Alexa Bliss fans. I'm blaming every one of you at once.
And my problem with Alexa Bliss is purely when she was, like, literally winning everything and, like, being the Triple H of the women's division. It isn't so much now where she's just, like, you know, she does, she plays her character, she does her thing. She's not the center of all of attention, and she does, she's not terrible or anything. She's perfectly fine. She actually seems to be a pretty cool person as a person, from what I've seen.
But yes, for it's all just, those things.
Huh?
Yes, for all those things. I'm just sour because it came at the expense of Bayley.
Yeah. And also, just, it wasn't just Bayley, it was everyone for like 2 years. Came at the expense of Becky. I mean, which we'll get to very briefly, actually.
Yes, but I felt that. Like, it came off the worst. It'll be another episode, another, like, long from now, but just...
I mean, no, well, we're going to talk about that in, like, 10 minutes. 15, because we had to go through one more match first. But I think we've discussed the beginnings now enough. Like, we discussed, like, yeah, she's shown those hints. And, I mean, and for what it's worth, as someone who's watched more of this run, she sticks with the heel character for the entirety of, you know, not very long. She was only around for, like, I think up to, like, Shimmer 8 or 9 was her last one. She only did, like, 5 or 6 shows because she got injured. And then after she was injured, she semi-retired and then came back. But even when she came back, like, in, like, I forgot, it was many Shimmers down the line, she came back, and everyone was cheering for her, and they were all like, oh, Becca Knox is back, she's back in wrestling, oh, this is so great, and then she just, like, was like, oh, I feel your love, and then she totally cut a heel promo, and everyone turned heel immediately, started shitting on everybody.
Yeah.
And it was, turned that on 100% at the time, and that was, like, right before she got signed. Like, after she came back, she got signed pretty quickly. So it was just, so she like this was, even though, like, the babyface character is what most people remembered her for up until recently in WWE, like, this type of arrogant, confident heel thing was her indie persona, essentially, at least for a lot of these, at least North America. Mm. So I don't know much about her Ireland career or her UK and Europe career, so I can't speak to those. But right. I can speak to what I've seen for North America is, like, this was the beginning of that, this heel turn, and kind of makes sense seeing where she is now. Like, this is the character that she slipped back into like a glove, and that's what's got her the most over. So,
okay, sounds good. I'm gonna take a moment to discuss NXT TakeOver Rival, the fatal four-way match between the four horsewomen, and I'm sure we're gonna, like, come back to it, like, multiple times, but. The first time I ever watched this match, I felt like Becky did nothing. Like, that's why I came away from the first time I ever watched it. I'm not sure if it's bias or rose-colored glasses or just being, like, a little bit older so you, like, look back and appreciate things. But if you, like, look back on this match with Becky, she goes out of her way to make everyone else in the match look great. She, like... gets in this position of where Sasha can hit, like, a double knee drop on her and Charlotte at the same time. She, like, makes sure she's front and center to catch Sasha for, like, a suicide dive. Like, there's these little moments in this match where Becky is, like, doing the most to make sure the other three look great. And she does shine, like, in certain spots. And I also appreciate the fact that she's wearing ring gear very similar to one of her first matches in Shimmer. It's just silver and red. But it has, like, the same, like, cut and design, so to speak. A far cry from, like, steampunk later and looking like redheaded Black Canary, but, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll get to the steampunk thing shortly, because that was the last time that she was, like, standard gear.
Yeah.
In WWE. And, like, that was, I mean, you could also, like, I mean, it's funny the way you describe that, because, like, she was there making others look good, because, like, unfortunately, and a lot of fans were disappointed in this until recently, is that Becky seemed like her job was to prop up because she was really good at making other women look excellent, so she would end up propping up lots of other women wrestlers essentially at her expense. And that was always the perception. That honestly, I mean, now it seems like it's Bayley again, but for a long time people were like, Becky's the fourth, is the fourth wheel, so to speak, of the four horsewoman.
Yeah, I feel now, like it's always that's either
now, of course, that's nonsense, but like,
yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, is that she didn't, like, she's so good at doing that that you didn't notice all the good things that she was doing to get herself over at the same time. At least at the time. That said, that does change. It doesn't, and in NXT, it changes quickly. Because the next match we're going to talk about in depth is, well, relatively in depth, is her one-on-one title shot at NXT Unstoppable.
Right.
Against Sasha. Which is interesting that Sasha Becky is a feud between the four women that we haven't really
touched on, right?
Yeah, like, it hasn't really hit again, except for this one match, which, don't get me wrong, is amazing. But, like, this match is excellent. This is, like, going back and watching this was, like, it felt really refreshing because I hadn't watched a couple of things. I hadn't watched 2015-16 era NXT in a long time. I guess since the time. It's been, like, 3 years. And, like, you don't realize how much has changed because, right. Like, NXT really still felt, it's weird, it's this weird dichotomy because you have these people who are huge stars now you're watching, but the actual NXT feeling is different. It feels almost more like subdued, like more underground, like the crowd noise is smaller. It like used now you're used to watching NXT like takeovers where it's like, holy shit, we're in these giant buildings, everyone's losing their stuff.
Right.
And this is like in Full Sail, but like even Full Sail, like they were a little rowdy, but like they weren't crazy loud. Like, so like, when they did get loud, it was very noticeable, and like they get real loud like towards the end of this match, and it really, it has that kind of old school indie vibe to it, which is what people alternative quote unquote wrestling fans jumped onto with NXT as an alternative to like the main roster product from WWE at the time, and it was just bonkers good. Like the everything's sharp, the transitions were there, the story told over Sasha just keeps beating on Becky, but she won't stay down. Like everything about this match was meant. It was meant to turn Becky from the heel into like the babyface. Like this match was produced and designed to get Becky over as a babyface, show her how to never say die.
Yeah.
To show just how tough she is. And she nails it. It's like you cast her in this role that she hadn't done yet, and she just knocks out of the park in the first shot.
She really did. And one thing I find interesting is that you mentioned that we haven't ever gotten Sasha and Becky since, really, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the continuity of NXT right here, and then take and encompass everything out of Becky's career and the other three, you would think maybe Becky and Sasha should have been best friends or cast as like best friends throughout, and Charlotte and Bayley would be cast as like best friends, because the horsewomen have always been like, yeah, everybody's cool with each other, but it's always been a story of Sasha and Bayley, Charlotte and Becky.
Yeah. In the main roster, yes.
Yeah, main roster.
But you're right. Like, the original storylines were Charlotte turning on Bayley.
Yes.
And then eventually, like, getting redemption and fixing that.
Right.
Eventually. And Becky becoming Sasha's lackey at first, essentially, and then standing up for herself. Like, those were the two original NXT stories.
Right.
And then eventually went to Sasha Bailey, which was part of the, like, the absolute peak NXT moment of the first Brooklyn one. Like, it went from being old school NXT to what we know now.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why everyone remembers Sasha Bailey, because it hit peak moment. Like, that was what was going on at the time. But like I said, early NXT, like, the roles were, the casting was different. The two pairings were different. But yeah, it's interesting. And it's definitely, I mean, they'll never go back on it. Like, they don't, continuity is not a thing WWE does very, very well, unless it falls in their lap, basically. But it's still just an outstanding match. And it does make me think I would really like to see these two wrestle now, again, right? Now.
Yes. Yeah. Like,
especially like the man versus the boss, like in full blown character mode for both wrestlers.
I'd welcome it.
That'd be wild. Yeah, that'd be wild. Like, so.
No.
Yeah. And we can talk about the transitions they do and just how much of a beating Becky takes and keeps on coming and sells it beautifully this whole match, and how vicious Sasha is and how, like, she really sells that. But it's something that Sasha Banks in particular is excellent at, and doesn't really get to show off enough in the main roster, in my opinion, is that sense of how, like, how much of a pit bull she is, can be in the ring, and how she got that viciousness in her that she really sells well. Like, it comes out beautifully in here. We can talk about the finish off the top rope and how, like, it ends. Like, all that stuff's great, but, like, the real moment here is at the end, when it's not even wrestling, when Becky's just in the ring and she's clearly upset, but all the fans start, like, singing her song, chanting her name.
She was made.
Like, the announcers put her over, and, like, I saw an interview about this match. I think it's on WWE Network, because they do the collections or whatever of all the wrestling matches, and they have people, they do little snippets of interviews in between. And Becky talked about how, like, because she's crying in that moment, but, like, in kayfabe, it's because she lost the match, and that was her shot, right? That was her one shot to win the title, and she can't blow short. But, like, in real life, she said it was real crying, because this was, like, her first big one-on-one match, and she was like, it's make or break. And she said that during the match, she was really worried that it wasn't coming off well for some reason, because she was too much in her head.
Right.
And she thought, oh, this is not going well, this match, I mean, ironically. And at the end, when she, like, looks up and everyone starts, like, losing their mind for her after Sasha leaves, she was just like, oh, my God. And, like, I did it. And then she started their happy tears, even though they're played off for sadness on kayfabe. I thought it was really interesting. Because, I mean, yeah, she kills it. Like, the whole match, it was a coming out party, essentially, because she had been kind of underutilized to that point. Like I said, the whole storyline here is that she was Sasha's lackey, and she started just like, I'm going to stand up for myself. Because you taught me to do this, basically. It was kind of like it's like, where did you learn this turning on people thing? I learned it from you.
Which I find hilarious, because it's a weird cycle of Sasha turned on Charlotte. Becky turns on Sasha. And Bailey is just like, you're all terrible.
Well, no, it was first Charlotte turns on Bailey. Then it was.
Oh, shit.
Then it was. Then it was Sasha turns on Charlotte.
That's so depressing.
Then it was Becky turns on Bailey. Then it was Becky turns on Sasha.
Oh, my God.
And then we get to the main roster. So,
I feel like that's why Bailey enjoyed her championship. She got to enjoy her championship reign after all three of them were gone. Until Asuka. So I feel
like, and then Asuka came in and no one was champion for
and no one was ready. No one was ready for Asuka, but
though totally different episode. But I will point out, I will say that if we ever do an Asuka or a Ember Moon Athena episode, the hill I will die on is that Ember should have beaten Asuka on the way out of NXT, and they should not have carried over the undefeated streak. I will die on that hill.
I mean, you're welcome
forever. That said, I don't think they did the wrong thing by not putting the title on Becky, because the Sasha Bailey story was natural, and I think calling up Becky would give her an opportunity. Now, how they played things out after that is a whole other story, but I don't think not winning the title in NXT actually hurt Becky really at this time, considering how popular she was very quickly in the main roster and things like that. It didn't seem to hurt her credibility or overness at all. And I think that because this match was so fresh in people's minds when she was called up, I think that had a lot to do with it.
It helped.
Yeah. So now we've seen her, the beginnings of the shit heel and the beginnings of the underdog babyface, because this is essentially her first time doing the underdog babyface thing with this unstoppable match, and she nailed it. And then now she carries the underdog babyface character all the way to the main roster for a few years. Comes up short against Charlotte a few times. They do the thing, they had the WrestleMania match, the Royal Rumble match. And then fast forward a bit later to the brand split, and the match where Becky finally sort of gets her first due. But as the babyface, yeah, it's the six-pack women's title match at Backlash. 2016, I think.
2016.
Yeah.
Not much action for Becky in this match, all things considered.
It really isn't that strong of a match watching it back. Like, I remember being really happy after it when I watched it originally, but I think it was just because I was like, I just really needed a Becky win at that point.
Yeah.
And it happened, so I was happy. But yeah, the matches, I mean, ironically, despite what we were saying before, I guess this makes sense based on what happened afterwards. The person who really looked the best out of that match, despite going out first, was Alexa Bliss. She had multiple really good spots, and especially at the time, she was considered kind of like a mediocre wrestler who couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And she kind of showed up. And Alexa basically finally started nailing spots that she had been a little sloppy in NXT and things like that that she'd been still working on, but like she was nailing them here. She hit that beautiful Code Red. She was hitting the knees right. Like, that was a move that she worked on forever in NXT that just never seemed to like work. Now she does it flawlessly. But like, and so it was kind of a coming out party because I guess she was like one of the last people picked too in the draft. So like, there obviously wasn't like big plans for her, but like, she looked real strong in this match.
She really
and
did.
Despite losing first somehow, which is its own accomplishment. So I guess that kind of makes sense where we go from there with how that happened afterwards, what happens afterwards. But Becky, she does some really good chain wrestling work in the beginning and then gets knocked out for heavy chunks of the match afterwards. And then there's a whole bunch with Naomi in there as well. So it's weird, but given her babyface character and underdog nature of it all, like people, like everyone, it was like one of those things where like, you know how like when you have like a dress shirt on for, I guess only men can wear it. Well, that's not true. The women wear those choky dress shirts too, that like they button up the top. And you're like, oh God, my neck all day. And then you release it at the end. And it's like, oh, thank God. That's what it felt like when Becky finally, when Kamala taps out, you're like, oh, thank God.
Yes.
You okay, man?
I could just picture wearing a collared tie. Mm-hmm. And a full everything, and just that first unbutton.
Yeah. Yep. That, like, oh, thank God.
Finally.
Yep. And like, it almost. I mean, this is, I don't want to say it's WWE's credit because I don't think it was a major design, but I think it was partly just because like the fans were so clamoring for it that the match could have been garbage, and as long as it ended with the right person winning, everyone would have been happy. I mean, it wasn't a bad match, but it's a very average match if you take it in totality. Like, especially compared to like what, like the opposite of that was Charlotte and Sasha wrestling like classics every goddamn week on Raw at the same time. So I mean, in a weird way, the women's divisions weren't really all that. I mean it's funny now saying that because like it was the other way around for like the next year, like when Alexa Bliss took over and was eventually drafted to Raw, and she just never lost, and every match was just a standard Alexa Bliss match, and then SmackDown was where all the cool stuff was happening, essentially. So it's weird how things go up and down with that, but this match is a lot of taking turns, and Becky didn't have a whole lot of them, like you said.
I mean, it's true, and I feel like Money in the Bank, which was 2018, was another one of those matches where you could tell what the fans wanted. Do you remember when like Becky was so close to the briefcase and like the fans lost their shit? Like, so much want for her to like take it and touch it and finally go, and then Alexa Bliss won, and then cashed in like 2 hours later, two or three hours later. But
yep,
that moment, WWE had to know like, oh hey, they really want her to win.
I mean,
we haven't killed her face.
she was that. That's when she started winning SmackDown matches. Basically, right after that, like she won. She slowly. They were doing the Charlotte storyline. They were doing the Carmella Asuka storyline. But like in the background, Becky was just quietly winning a whole bunch of singles matches on SmackDown.
Just
like,
bubbling up.
Yep, and like just, they're just building her and building her, getting her wins over people that she hadn't beaten yet, or people that she needed to win back over, kind of thing. Like they were reestablishing her. Then the rest from that point is history, because we all saw what happened at SummerSlam. So
yeah.
But I mean, that is, so it's interesting, because like you have like this kind of sandwich at this point of her very early indie days. She's in this heel, arrogant heel character. And then in WWE, I mean, she has a little bit of that, but like she ultimately very early on gets over as this super underdog, beloved baby face and sticks with that.
Who loves quinoa?
Huh?
Who loves quinoa?
Yes, and puns. Don't forget puns.
And
yes.
Nearly wore Sami Zayn's hat that turned her evil.
Yeah. Also, we didn't mention this earlier, but we kind of mentioned it. But yeah, but she debuted the new look for the steampunk look at that Unstoppable, and she stuck with that for 3 years.
Yes.
But it was unique and it was interesting. What I do think was part of her initial appeal when she came up is that she didn't look like every other female wrestler. She has like, she had a look and that was her and it worked. And that's important to WWE, especially if you're going to be a babyface, you have to have some kind of distinguishing thing that makes people, you know, want to wear your merch. Not for nothing.
But, right.
And she rode this character out, and it was kind of one of those things like, you know, she was sticking, she was the sting of the women's division, essentially, including the dumbness.
I mean, she was SmackDown's. Bayley was still Raw's.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
At least Becky was like, look, she had, like, Bayley would lose just because she just lost, but Becky would lose because she's better, but she's dumb. So, sting. Like, clearly you should win. But you are not. Easily distracted, or you fall for a dumb heel gimmick, or like, or you're betrayed again.
La luchadora.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so like,
just it's a mess. But all of that compounded, and all the frustration, the rage, the anger, the fact that WWE wanted us to pretend that Charlotte didn't like betray Becky like 10,000 times.
Right. Everyone just forgot that. It still does, by the way, to this day.
It still
does. Like, oh, how dare you? How dare you turn on me? After your frustrations, friend. Your very legitimate frustrations, Becky, when I turned on you for like no reason at all, like 2 years ago, except that I just felt like I was cool or whatever. And
I would never. I would never have my father kiss you or. Or try to put you in different moves or insult your intelligence. I would never betray T Generation X. Gross.
But the thing is, the irony here is that she was originally trying to go back to that heel character and tap into that. It's just that fans were like, nah, we don't care. Fuck it.
No, we'll still love her.
Becky Lynch went, I mean, I said she was a sting, but in this way, she was like the Ricky Steamboat. She went full Ricky Steamboat. Like, it doesn't matter. Like the joke about Ricky Steamboat that Pat Patterson used to say was, like, Ricky Steamboat could come out and, like, shoot Hulk Hogan in the face. And the fans would be like, you know what? Hogan had it coming. Son of a bitch. Like, they just can't be a heel.
I was gonna make the comparison to Crow Sting in that he could do no wrong when Crow Sting was, like, super insanely over.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, it just... You know what?
But he was supposed to be over, to be fair. They were trying to make Becky heel for like 3 weeks.
Good point. I'm just saying, like, Crow Sting beat people up with bats. And people were still cheering him just loudly.
Well, yeah, because he's facing 20 people in the NWO or whatever. Look, and Hogan's like slapping people with his belt like a friggin'... I'm not even gonna get into the weirdness of that with a southern company like WCW, but like, yeah, it was the NWO was like, I mean, I know there are people who liked them because they were rebellious or whatever, but like you, Crow Sting was meant to be that, like, you know, fight fire with fire kind of thing. So, but uh But I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess you could see that, like the dumb baby face Sting finally, like, you know, throwing that in for a different, you know, more angry gimmick. I could definitely see that comparison making sense. But I was just saying, I just meant in the sense of like the fans just like, nah, you can't make us boo or we don't care.
Right.
like, yeah, what she's doing is objectively horrible, but like, nah, we're good. Like, we're fine.
Right. Like, not at all. And that leads us to the final match of this collection. Becky versus Charlotte at Evolution.
Last woman standing.
Or as I like to call it, Becky plays Sarah Connor. Charlotte is the Terminator. Because that is the psychology of this entire match.
Yes. Also, just like, damn. But you know what? And Charlotte doesn't, I feel like, because a lot of fans are reacting to Charlotte because she's gotten so much, like, she should still get credit because she's real good in this match.
Bro, she, like, literally pulled herself
out of wreckage. She took all kinds of punishment and was, like, hitting, doing crazy stuff. And, like, the facial expressions and the acting, just chef's kiss, hand motion, just,
like, I remember it was stated that when she first came to NXT, holy crap, by the way, she got super swole over the last couple years.
Dude, Charlotte is an Amazon.
Yes.
Charlotte was an Amazon even in NXT. She's even more, like,
but she was
physically fit now.
She, like, was just, like, tall and obviously, like, fit. But I'm looking back from there to now, or even as close as, like, bro, she could end lives.
Yeah, no, if Charlotte wanted to, like, go back in time and start an MMA career instead of a wrestling career,
I'd believe it. I'd accept it.
Yeah, like, but she's an Amazon. Even back in NXT days, she was, like, she's bigger than you think. It was, like, I remember going to an NXT house show way back in the day. Back when they still have them here before WWE was decided they were too good for Albany, New York. Sasha defended the title against Charlotte, and, like, I hadn't seen her on TV. I mean, like, on TV, like, it's one thing because, like, you know, she's got, like, her image didn't really fit that because she was wearing, like, glittery pinks and purples, and she was, you know, they blonded her up and they put the makeup on her, all this kind of stuff. Like, it doesn't give that sense of, like, oh man, she's, like, a badass. But, like, when I saw her up close and I realized how much bigger she was than a lot of the other women that she's wrestling, and how, like it, like, the impact of, like, when she doesn't do this as much anymore, but she used to do that thing where she put, like, the figure four neck lock and she'd, like, turn over and flip people over and just slam them. Yes. Just do it over and over again. Amazing. I missed that.
So do I. But yeah, I was saying, like, her mannerisms in Evolution, like, they had told her once upon a time when she first came to NXT, like, try not to be like your dad.
Right.
We're going to, like, build you up first, and then we can point out, like, mannerisms and things later. Mm-hmm. What kills me is that in this match, as she is taking the beatings, like, some really crazy spots, she literally is, like, channels him for a second with the, oh, God! Oh, God!
Oh, God!
Oh, God! I'm just like, Rick? Yeah.
Have you ever seen Xavier Woods' impression of Ric Flair? Because it's amazing.
No, I have not, but that's...
You can, after this is done, find it on the internet, because it's just fantastic. Again!
I'm ready.
She handles, you get those little bits and pieces here and there, but generally speaking, what's nice and impressive about Charlotte is that she is a very different wrestler, despite the pomp and circumstance, than Rick is. Because Rick was the dirtiest player in the game. Like, he wasn't, like, he did the same shtick every night, always cheated to win. Like, it was cowardly heel act, using his buddies to get the win all the time. I mean, he was, you know, it's what Evolution was based off of. But Charlotte is legitimate badass, heel or face. Like, she's scary strong. She's, you know, she's impressive. She's so explosive when she wants to be. And that comes off here. And I know, like, they were still trying to, like, they were acknowledging the fans were cheering for Becky, but they were still trying to, like, make Charlotte seem like the quote good guy in this point. And they played it inspection. I mean, she, you know, if under normal circumstances she would have been a perfect avenging babyface. It's just that, like, so many fans were just like, no, this is Becky's time, so it doesn't matter. And I mean, ultimately it doesn't matter because it was still one of the best matches. It's probably the best match of last year. It's gonna go down as an all-time classic, especially considering being on Evolution, the first women's pay-per-view, and all that stuff. So just, it was just so good. And but Becky, but like the Terminator, speaking to your Sarah Connor Terminator moment, I mean, if you want to just explain the moment, because I think you know the same one that I'm thinking of, and since you made the comparison, that like encapsulates this match where Becky just, I mean, do you want to say it?
Are you talking about the table?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
If you want like to describe.
Go ahead.
All right. This is like basically back at this point, they've already like beaten each other to hell and it's just been a nightmare. And then like Becky's just like, nah, I'm done with this. First, she jumps off a freaking ladder with a double leg drop through the table.
Yes.
And that's not enough. No. She's going to bury Charlotte and just smashes her with a bunch of stuff. Everything she can buy, she just throws it on top of her, beats her with it, and throws it on top. Beats her with it, throws it on top. Like, it's like what Cena did to beat Wyatt.
Yeah, like, basically.
Like, but yeah, like, you know, just basically positively, you can't even get up. And like, he's just like, so basically, I got this. And she's like barely walking because she's already been beaten up too. And she goes over, like, leans on the apron. It's like, ah, yeah, count. And then like at 8, Charlotte just like, it's like from like a sci-fi or like a fantasy thing where like the monster or like the hero just rises from the ashes and just like, just literally the things just like pop off and Charlotte just like stands up and has this look of pure anger and it's just so perfect and everyone's like, just like, oh shit. Like Becky's face is just terror.
The reason I let you explain it is because there's so many comparisons to be made. It is like, it's like Kill Bill where the she dug herself out of destruction and debris, and she's just like, you will die.
Yeah. Like, a lot of wrestlers could get up from that, but, like, wouldn't make it look that good. Like, Charlotte made it look like, so she's like, that's all you got, kind of thing.
Like,
it's like you threw the asteroid at the boss in, like, the end of the anime sequence or whatever.
Yes.
And then I was like, ha, this is not even my final form.
you unlocked this, like, final attack that you've been waiting to finally use on, like, this final boss. And you wiped your MP or whatever.
Yeah, your man is gone.
And you're just like, yes, I did it. Wait, he has a second form?
Yeah. It's like when you're fighting Mortal Kombat and you beat Shinnok at the end, and then it's like, just kidding, this is the real Shinnok, and turns into the demon Shinnok or whatever. And it was that, and Becky sells it just like that. Like, she's like, okay, just kidding, I'm out, I'm good.
She's like, oh no.
Like, no. She does like the full on like Triple H when Triple H sees like Batista or Cactus Jack or any of his other many enemies. There's like the full on like, oh yeah, I was a badass seconds ago, but now I'm a coward.
You know, I was kidding. I was just messing with you. I swear, I don't. Please, yeah. No, please, God.
Yeah. No, shaking the head. No. Yeah.
Please, no.
Yeah, God. And it goes real well for Charlotte for like, but in the end, the match too, because like Charlotte's like getting ready to like just murder Becky at the end, and then it takes Becky to counter it one last time to get the win. And then Becky's like, when she's walking away at the end, she's just like there's like this look of like yeah I won, but oh god, why? like she's seen some shit at the end of that match when she's walking out. And it's beautiful. Like, it just, the escalation is perfect, the pacing is there. And, like, even, like, the little moments of the match, another good moment for the match is, like, they managed to turn, like, a flub into something that made the match even better. It was, like, when the table didn't break. Because Charlotte hits the moonsault, the table won't break. And the announcers it goes out too, and they're and Cole's like, well, that could have been a lot worse for both women. And then Charlotte gets up and she flips the table, and then I forgot, I think it was Saxon who's like, I think Charlotte has a lot worse in mind. And she puts Becky back on and just like, okay, now we're gonna do a senton, and this time the table breaks, and it's like, ah, like turning it into like a sequence instead of like a mistake. Like it just came out perfectly. So like even the things that didn't go exactly right ended up elevating that match because of the nature of how Becky and Charlotte played it out. So, and we've been giving Charlotte a lot of lip service here, but the point of this is that Becky nails it too. Like her acting throughout this match is just on point. And like that persona, like that, like kind of came off a little bit try-hardy as a bad guy, you know, 15 years ago in Shimmer, is effortless here and perfect and like encapsulates everything. So like, it's like the full development hits here. Like this is like, I don't want to say it's peak Becky, because we could still be a ways out from peak Becky based on how things are going, but at least forever we have I'm not tired of watching Charlotte and Becky wrestle, WWE, if you ever listen to this. So if you want to keep just going back to the well on that for a while, I'm okay with that. Like that's fine, because hot damn.
Good times. I'm just so many little moments in that match, and God, what was I gonna say? I literally had like a thought, and it just
oh no, just, said little moments. Was there other little moments in the match you wanted to mention?
I just it was a it had to do with a table. It literally had to do with a table near the end that was just horrifying and beautiful at the same time. Mm. And I'll probably, like, it'll probably come to me, and, like, next episode, we'll be like, guys, by the way, remember the Becky
episode? They'll text me in 3 days, like, I got it.
I remember.
Is it when Becky's, like, looking down, but, like, not, like, before when Becky, if I remember correctly, when Becky murder death killed Charlotte, but not really, over with the bearing and the table and stuff like that, and Charlotte got up, she was all like smug at first about it, and then like when she did it this time, even though she ends up winning on it, she's like looking Stay down back. But there's no smile. It's she just had... like
please God, stay down. Yes, okay, that's it. It was the, like the reaction she gave of just, please God, let this be enough.
Right,
you have to be done.
Like, the bullet I have just dodged would be the end of me.
Yes. That was it.
And like, so they both, and another great man thing about this match is, and this is credit to both women, is they elevate each other that way. Is that, you know, Becky wins, and Charlotte, you know, the way Becky kept, Charlotte made, you know, like, look, it's really feel like Becky conquered, like, this epic character at the end of the match, this epic badass, and Charlotte, because the way it was played out, so it elevates Becky, and Becky, the way she was, you know, she acted and got scared of and was like, you know, oh shit, with Charlotte, like elevated Charlotte even. Like that match was really, was an all-timer. And like I said, those things that, like, you talk about little moments, like that's also a good comparison, like to bring it back full round, because like you look at the Shimmer match, they had little moments, but like I said, sometimes they seemed a little bit like she was trying too hard, a little bit like, you could see seeds of stuff, but like it's unpolished. And then, But she's still trying to get them in there. And then in Unstoppable, it's different because it's babyface moments, but like the beating she took, the getting back up, the never get, the not tapping out, like those moments end up, and like the end of the match, those moments where, you know, she shows the real emotion at the end to get over with the crowd, that was, you know, that helped get her over. And it, even though the match wasn't that great in the six pack, you know, it was the moment of Becky actually getting that tap out and like the look on her face when they handed her the belt and everything. And now it's the little moments in this, like she's like, in a lot of ways, Becky is the master. I mean, she's a talented wrestler, she's a good mat worker, and she's good at transitions, but I mean, there are better in ring purely wrestler, if you will, in ring competitors in the women's division in WWE, but Becky knows how to insert that little bit of character into every match, whether she's the good guy or the bad guy. Mm. And that's something that she's been working on for all of her career, essentially. And it's been her forte. And like now she's reached that, like, that next level kind of stuff. It's like this, it's the kind of thing that like you know, that The Undertaker does, or Triple H, or Mick Foley is good at it too. Like, we're talking about like top level all time guys here who are great at that stuff, and Becky has that mastered. Like, it's one of the most important things that takes you from being like a good wrestler to like a top wrestler.
Right.
So, like, if I had to pick, like, looking at these four matches, if I had to pick the one thread that combines them, it's that the in-between moments, like the little things in the match that make you remember the match. That's what Becky is best at, and that serves her very well.
And I have no doubt when we get to WrestleMania, that's what we're going to get.
One can only hope. I'm going to be there, so Becky better goddamn win. At the very least, Charlotte, let Charlotte win, because if Ronda fucking wins that match, I swear to God, I'm going to murder everybody. Just everyone.
Look, man, all I know is that if Becky Lynch and Kofi goddamn Kingston don't win at this WrestleMania,
right, a lot of people are worried because they're afraid that Vince won't let both Becky, Kofi, and Seth all win in the same night. I think that's a little silly, because Vince has had some pretty big babyface nights before, but I know in recent years he's been curmudgeonly with the audience because they've been at odds, but I feel like they're not really at odds in this thing. Vince got behind Becky real quick and apparently loves her for everything that, I mean, based on just the booking alone, clearly, like, they've made her the centerpiece of everything. And then he's always liked Seth, and Kofi, they jumped right on this. They didn't, like, you know, they didn't wibble wobble on this. So, And Vince loves the New Day too. Like they make him so much goddamn money. So
they literally make him hand over fist.
Yes. Like that's the thing. That's the great. I mean, we'll get into this. I think Kofi Kingston is an excellent possible selection for a future episode as well. Oh
God, yes.
And that'd be a rare episode where every match is going to be WWE, because he basically did nothing before WWE.
Pretty much.
And he's like a real company guy, but like normally, like, and he's another weirdo in that, like, Becky has that pedigree, you know. She's paid her dues. She almost retired on the Indies, and then she did all this stuff in Europe, and people remembered her from Shimmer or other things. So like there was a lot of hype for Becky when she was just signed to NXT. But like a lot of company guys, a lot of we'll call Smarks, screw it, we'll say Smarks, you know, don't give them the credit they deserve because they're WWE guys, and for some reason that's taboo. If you're a wrestling fan, you didn't pay your dues or whatever, but Kofi's a guy that generally people like, have always liked, despite being pretty homegrown,
well-known homegrown,
yeah, which I thought was interesting. But like, but also, unlike, say, Becky, I mean, Kofi, technically the New Day did have a heel run, but like, Kofi didn't even got a solo heel run or like a way to like really flex his character.
Right.
So, speaking back to this moments theme in this episode, what Becky's so good at, and back to how those things are the things that help you make you really get over, Kofi really never got a lot. I mean, the New Day as a team managed to do it a lot, you know, by being funny or also just having good moments and have the fire baby face thing, or even when their initial heel run, like the kind of righteous anger thing. But the Elimination Chamber match was an excellent example of Kofi doing the same thing, because the little moments of that Daniel Bryan Kofi standoff at the end were just fantastic. Like the jumping up on the chamber, stare down at Daniel Bryan, who's like, oh no, and
no,
yeah, and Kofi just like standing over him, and like even just like when he the thing that he did when AJ came to the ring after Kofi had pinned all those people, and AJ's like, I don't want to wrestle, you're like barely alive, and Kofi's like, nah, fight me.
I've been waiting 11 years long for this.
Yeah. like it's those things that stick out in people's minds and tie back into Becky, like we just said. Like, I don't think that where Becky is now, I think it's pretty clear that those things are like, it's because everyone always talks about like, how good are you a promo are you, or how good, you know, can you, how great of a wrestler in ring are you? But like, it's like the acting bits, like the tiniest things that like can really turn you from like liking someone to like marking full out for them. And I feel like that's what separates like great wrestlers from elite wrestlers. And I feel like that Becky has jumped into elite because of that.
Yeah. Also, as a random aside, when we do the Kofi episode, Dolph versus Kofi, I think SummerSlam 2010. I'll have to recheck it. That's another day. But yes, that concludes our episode for Becky Lynch. By all means, go check out more episodes of Shimmer. You can find her career through that. Any other recommendations you would say for Becky?
I mean, other matches?
Yeah, like any final ones?
That Fatal 4-Way, that's, I mean, everyone knows that one, though. Like, it's gone down in legend because it's the Four Horsewoman Fatal 4-Way. So, I mean, most people know about that. But yeah, you can... I think it's like somewhere in the 20s or something like that. It's like 27 or 25 or something like that, that she comes back. Like if you get, or if you can just find it on YouTube, I don't know, her return promo where she like gets the love and then just goes heel shit on the crowd is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And totally worth a watch. And I mean, other than that, I mean, the WrestleMania 32, like a lot of her best matches in WWE are matches that are like in legend now. Like, she doesn't have like a lot of like dark horse secret hits in WWE.
I can let me see if I'm right about this. Becky. Is that it? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a Becky versus Brie match. Brie Bella. I know that's a shock.
Oh yeah, no, because I think I heard about this. Becky likes this match in particular.
Yeah, it was a random...
I don't know what... Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which one it was, but there's a specific one.
I think it was, like, on Main Event.
It was either Main Event or a SmackDown.
Yeah, it was, like, something totally random. I remember someone... I don't remember actually seeing the match, but I remember hearing about it in an interview. So.
It was a random one.
Yeah. There's also, not really, it's not a secret hit, but like one that I think is a little overlooked is the match with Mickey, the blow off to their feud on SmackDown back in, I guess it would have been early 2017. Cause it wasn't Backlash. It was Elimination Chamber. They had their blow off. That was the SmackDown pay-per-view with three women's matches on it. Everyone was like, oh crap. not as big of a deal, but back then that was like, what? And they had Becky Mickey on it and it blow off their feud, and Becky won, and that I thought that was a really good match that is slightly overlooked. But like I said, most of Becky's real top stuff, I mean, she gets noticed. Like when she goes all out. Goes all out. Yeah. Mm. So
but okay. That's that is it for this episode. Next episode, we'll be doing Seth.
Yep, staying relevant to the
staying relevant. We'll be doing the Beast Slayer because he ain't the man no more.
Yeah, hopefully he actually will be the Beast Slayer.
Let's hope so.
And we're also waiting for the. We're waiting to do the Kofi one because if. We just don't want to get Booker T'd here. So we're hoping that everything works out at WrestleMania. But just in case
I'm gonna go do Peter
everything Preston. Is horrible, we can it'll change the entire tone of the episode. So we're gonna wait to see.
I'm gonna go be depressed now.
Nah, that's not okay. We'll say this though. Kofi is at least going up against Daniel Bryan. And there is something poetic about Brian basically getting this exact rub, this underdog babyface rub, 5 years ago. And now being in a position as a top heel champion getting to do it, the same thing for another, like, hard, like, long-time worker, you know, guy who just got caught lightning and deserves that big moment. Like, it would be really poetic for Brian to be the guy to do it. So, hoping for the best on that.
It is, and it will fit if, like, the next SmackDown, with no title, he's just pointing at the crowd and being like, Fickle! Fickle! Yeah. Fickle. And on that note, thank you guys, and we'll see you next time.